can see, let me start out by acknowledging. What I'm hoping to address is basically one question. If I do have time, then I'm hoping to address two of the side issues which may of certain interest to the. But what I'm mainly hoping to talk about is how the structure, electronic structure in evolution of the dope insulators. And you can see sort of these are the three photomation groups being collaborating with the group at Stanford and also at Advanced Light Source at Berkeley, and the group at the Colorado and at the University of Tokyo. And we get samples from a lot of places. And mostly I'm going to focus on today are the samples from the University of Tokyo cloud. I'm hoping to address this one issue, which is a long-term issue, being around for a long time, is what is the doped mod insulator and what distinguishes it from a band insulator. Historically, most of the arguments will be saying, well, this is a correlation-driven insulator. Well, most of the argument will be saying that, well, one can make a mod insulator into a band insulator, like, because they always order the low temperature. Then a lot of argument was on the temperature. But now, naively, if you would thinking you would dope an insulator, the trivial thing will be if you start out with the insulator, and if you think you feel dope a P-type, that's where you would end it up. And if you would dope N-type, that's what you would end up. That's a very simple semiconductor picture. That means that you would expect a huge shift of chemical potential. Okay. And in 1990, Jim Allen raised this issue. The expected chemical potential shift was never observed. Okay. I think it was followed up by Atsushi Fujimori's group in some of the underdoped region. Later on, you don't see any chemical potential shift until about near optimal or overdoped regions. Then you begin to see, as we are always seen by my group and also George Zawadzki's group, after about 20% doping, then if you put it in more things, you begin to see chemical potential shifts with doping. And this is a very peculiar problem has been around for a long time. Okay. Now, there are, as you look at it, there are many, many body approach to the problem, and most distinct feature, if you're thinking about many body feature of this, is that as you dope, you sort of create states here and spectral wave transfers. And much of that coming from doping is coming from numerical work. And Doug and Balut works here, and also I think several, George's group and Hanker's group do that a lot. But even all those calculations has create many of the features, if I'm right, Doug, it still requires a chemical potential shift. Okay. The lack of the chemical potential shift with doping still was a puzzle.
Can I ask a clarification?
Yeah.
Is this chemical potential the energy of the envelope?
Yeah. What do you
state? I mean,
yeah, the basic reference to a core level. Of all the core levels.
It's not reference to a piece of metal.
Right. How do we need to measure it?
Right. Basically, you always, where?
Would you describe it? How do you measure it? What
yeah, sure. The way it measures is that you have your sample and have a photon comes in and takes out the electron, but your sample is grounded together with a piece of gold. You also take electron out from here, and then you reference the signal from here to the signal from here, so you have chemical potential of these two should line up. Okay, so you have the same. Let's say now you could say this is a P type, and you assuming you now lined up the N type, and do the same thing. All photon comes in and out, and
what
so.
You line up, you put a gate voltage on it.
Oh no! If you connect them together, you would have
you
the same. Ground them together, you have the same chemical potential.
Radio are the P-types, even there's also the question, do you have a jump when you go from P-types?
Okay. You don't see a jump.
Yeah.
between P and N type, right? And that's something very obvious. I mean, that's how all this semiconductor device works. It's an electron volt. It's a huge effect. And this effect is not seen. I mean, that was a very peculiar. Now then people followed up in the underdoped region, and you don't see any shift in...
Can you really measure that by on the measurement for the emission, or you have also to have some information about the drug for the emission?
No, just by photo... just by photo machines is sufficient, yeah. Yes. Okay. One can always be fooled by surface effect. Okay. One can always, but that can be said about any data. So it's not peculiar to this particular aspect of the data.
So you can find about different chemistry of enzymes
Since none of those are my work, so I'm not going to be here defending any of this. I'm just want use this to set up the stage for the next thing of whatever. I'm just trying to use this as to raise as a question. Now let me go on. And what I'm hoping to to show is basically at least in one material. Let me focus on one material systems. Is the Langston strontium copper oxide systems. The material tried to solve this problem by having a microscopic phase separation into stripes. That's
chop him up.
Right. Okay. Okay. This is the what do we measure? We measure the self energy and in the spectral function. And obviously, you can question many things. The real-world situation, we always are very surface-sensitive. We have inelastic scattering. We have instrument problems. We have cross-section. This is also a pretty large problem. And if you were working on more three-dimensional materials, you also, let's say, the scattering, Mr. Doug, that was one question we talked about it. Is that it's not, we're always thinking that we only look at the lifetime of the holes. You also have to worry about the lifetime of the electrons. You can only ignore them if the system is very two-dimensional. All those insulators could have three-dimensionality to it. Okay. And those are talking about electron volts. You need to have an isotropy of many order magnitude to take care of this. And that could be one of the same with the Langston strontium copper oxide stuff. Okay. Now, one quantity I'm going to use a lot today is this quantity. I'm talking about this band dispersion, and what I'm measuring in a simple picture should be a delta function. And of course, if you now frequency integrated, what you get is so-called on the sudden approximation, you get the n of k. In a non-interacting case, below kf, then you get a 1, and above that, and in a Fermi liquid type of sense, you have a quasi-particle weight z, and it's no longer 1. The point is that even if the spectral function itself was very spread out, and if you do a frequency integration, you can still catch a lot. There's one catch, one danger one has to bear in mind is that if I would have a dispersion like this, if I have a cutoff window in any experiment, you have to have a cutoff frequency. Then if the band is very close to the Fermi level, I'm sort of getting all the signals. If the band is far away, then I'm cutting off a lot of my spectral wave. That could be a danger.
How good is your K resolution normally be?
Ah, okay, I can say that the best K resolution now is about 0.1 degree, which corresponding to 10 to minus 4 of the Brian zone. And then that's over the last year or so. We used to be 1%.
Yeah.
Okay, over the last year or so, it's been improved by 2 order of magnitude. So that's, I think the K resolution is fairly good now. Okay. And that's the sort of the spectrometer we've been using. That's the new spectrometer we built. add the advanced phi source, and that's where all the electron detectors being done, and so that's where the sample holder comes in. So this gives you a scale that it's a pretty complicated experiment. Okay, so now let me go on this particular issue of Langston strontium copper oxide, the phase diagram. I mean, the story, at least I remembered, is that we always thinking we have a phase diagram like this, but it was in the original superconducting material in the Langston barium copper oxide system, I think in 1988, as Bob Shelton and maybe another group in Japan, they said there is an anomalous TC suppression at around 1/8. Okay. And this was sort of thinking maybe had something to do with the structural distortion of those materials because of the LTO transition. And but it was later on by neutron scattering experiment, I think here I'm showing the 95 picture by Jiang Chuan Quarter. But if you trace back, I mean, some of those incommensurate peaks that we're seeing, I don't know, in 1988 already in the paper by the MIT group. So that basically what they, as in this case, there was an elastic scattering case, and they see static peaks spreading into these four spreading, and in this case, this group interpreting this in the form of this kind of strike pattern. Okay. And now I think most of the neutron community think, at least for the static case, that's probably is the appropriate interpretation. Okay. So we started out our work along this line on the same family of the compound, exactly the same compound, is the Langston strontium copper oxide. So what I'm now showing you is data. Yeah. Phase. Yeah. You mean this region? Okay. It's very interesting. I don't know. So Ando came to give a talk last Friday. So it's now believed that, at least by that particular group and by the Tohoku MIT. And Brookhaven group believes it's more or less a diagonal stripes in this region. The stripes which are rotated 45 degrees. The stripes look very similar to the stripes seen in Nicolet.
Well, there are no spin glasses. The stripe thing was a misidentification.
I'm not willing to speak for them, so I think you need to ask themselves.
Okay. I think what happens is it has a small amount of impurities.
I think that's all I want to say. I mean, this is not the work we did. So. Okay. Now let me go on and show you the data. What I'm doing here is I'm measuring AK omega. Then I'm taking that data and I'm doing a frequency integration. Okay. Since I'm here, I'm showing you data with a pretty fine grid. Okay. This is this portion of the K-space region. Okay. I use a pretty fine grid and in K-space. You can see that it's interesting to see the blue means high intensity. How the high intensity spectral intensity is confined within these two boundaries. Okay. We have taken data more across in a larger region, so I can show you that. Therefore, it's reasonable for us to just symmetrialize the data. So that's the pattern we do get.
Okay.
This is the same material John Chuan Quarter found. It's this 1/8 doped neodymium Langston copper oxide. Okay, neodymium. So that's where the... Now, if I would use a more generalized definition of Fermi surface, that's where things changes here. Those will be the boundary. Then I would have drawn a Fermi surface more or less look like this. Okay. And if I would compare that with what you would expect the Fermi surface, this is sort of tie binding type of thing. Fermi surface. You would say, well, it's not that different, right? There are some resemblance. Of course, the data looks more straight. Okay. We actually try to go on and try to interpret the data within the context of a two-dimensional structure. Okay. It turns out to be very difficult. Let me just...
One more question.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
We could integrating up to 800 millivolt looks the same. Okay. Beyond 800 millivolt, we no longer have the window. Then the other oxygen orbitals and all that come into play.
What is the TC of the sample?
This sample has a TC about 8 Kelvin. Very weak superconductor.
No.
Where? This was measured above the superconducting transition temperature, but it was inside a stripe phase, a stripe ordering, below the stripe ordering temperature, which is about 70 Kelvin. So this is data taken at 20 Kelvin. When I need to come back to that point, I'll come back.
When you go to higher energy, you see often that you say, well, this is
which pattern?
Higher energy.
No, it's basically the same. But of course, go to higher energy when I hit on oxygen. Oxygen, then it's a very complicated pattern.
You're saying
So, okay, let me just try to. Let me just now show you. I've shown you 1/8, 12%. Okay. Now I'm showing you 10% data from 10% dope. You see again, now I'm showing you only one quarter of the brown zone. Okay?
Do you think these represent only one organization of the site? So
yeah, that's what I'm going to get to. I'm just showing you all the data first. Then I'll, the 10%, you can see it's extremely straight. Saying by the time you go to 500, you see go all the way across. Okay. Now, I am showing you data from 15%. This is just a few a sample. This is the data from 15%. Okay. Here, the 10% and the 15% data I didn't symmetrize. These are just the raw data as it came out. Okay. Now I just want to show you that now here I'm showing you a few of the line scans here. Because sometimes if you look at the image, right, it's hard to decide the width. Could be the line scan, you can see the width here hugged around quarter pi, you see a little bit of oscillation. I'm going to come back to, okay? That's we can fit with the Gaussian pretty well. What let's see, is there an eraser? God. This one, I think the 300, and the, if I go 500, is very similar.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me go back to it. What it is, in a simple non-interacting case, you would, in this case, you would expect to see N of K look like this, right? You see a drop, basically. Now, what you have seen now is basically more or less being smeared out, like into this. Of course, this is, okay. And certainly, if we're talking about a quasi-particle spectral weight Z, you don't see any discontinuity within that, so the Z will be very small. That certainly can put a bond to it. Okay.
So you expect your R for much more incoherent than a 2.2, but are they more incoherent than 2.4?
I'm going to show you that. Yeah, I'm going to come down to that. So, now, of course, the data looks, you know, if I looked at here, I mean, you see only part of the picture, but it's, we have also scans here, looks similar. It's something more or less like a two-dimensional pattern, right? Now, the most natural question will be, as I showed earlier, will be, well, maybe one should try first obligate to see, well, what about try to interpret the data in terms of Fermi surface like this? That's not that different from. There's some resemblance with the band structure interpretation. We actually tried pretty hard, and we give up on that. There are many detailed reasons, but I think the primary reason comes from here. Now I'm showing you data with a window of 100 millivolt. Okay, it's a small energy window, and the Fermi surface would have been going around like this. Yeah, that's still the one. It would have been going around like this, and this is the famous nodal direction of the V wave superconductor. There's no reason those nodal state will be so badly suppressed if I'm thinking about it in two-dimensional picture. In other words, there's no... here.
This is in the normal state, however.
Yes, above TC. Yeah. That's correct. But it doesn't really matter. The point is that if I would have a Fermi surface like this, there's no obvious reason I would have killed those states. Okay. So what we feel the better interpretation of the data... should be this kind of result. The system now forming stripes like this. Okay. I have a whole rich region and a whole poor region. The key thing here is that in the poor region now, you have this large charge gap. So within the energy window of 500-600 millivolt, I no longer see signals from those green regions.
What are the point length scale you expect here, and what is the length scale for the little you sample you get your signal?
I have a millimeter sample, so that's the averaging. My sample.
Suppose I have a very fine mesh of the same.
What about?
What kind of length scale would you still discriminate in your two separate phases?
Okay, I would later on show you the intensity modulations, which I believe is related with this modulation. So at least there's a length scale, I can see two of them. The interaction among the two of them. Okay. Now, what one now needs to see is that basically what I'm only seeing is the red region. Okay. You can either call that is half field stripe, or I call it the quarter field band. That's the same. Half field stripe means every two sides you have one hole there, and that's quarter field. That's the reason why you see a strip like this corresponding to stripes like that, which have a boundary of the quarter filling. In other words, taking a poor man's model, that's what I think. Think about a single stripe. Is that the charge moves around inside there. Okay. And I'm thinking, now consider a single stripe. Now, of course, you would have a filling about a quarter pi. And of course, this thing is independent of Kx. That's why you get this. Okay. Our data, then, it's a superposition of two domains going this way and this way. Again, the stripes are quarter field because every two sites you get one of them. Okay, and two domains which is superposed, this and this. And from this, actually, it's very easy to understand why here signal is low, just from considering the dispersion, the low line. It's very naturally you can explain the thing. So that, I think, is something I would say the easiest way to think about the data. Now, if I think about that way now, I can immediately come back and ask myself, what about this? I think you will, if you look at the data, you immediately say, what about all those spots? Okay. Now, I should say that this strip corresponding to stripes going this way, okay, corresponding to vertical stripes. Now, if you really look at the vertical stripes, the horizontal strips correspond to the vertical stripes. The stripe-to-stripe distance is the four lattice constant. Okay. Now you would have a Q vector will be 2 pi over 4a, so it's about half of pi over a. Okay. And if you really look at the separating thing of them, it's about half of pi of those spots.
If the two Fermi's really go all the way across and you get superposed, then
I should see double signals here. That's what you're saying.
Right.
But I here I'm not willing to go too quantitative, mainly for two reasons. You see, the matrix element, there are two effects here. Effect number one, as the matrix element is A dot K square, which is proportional to K square. By the time you go to the zone center, your matrix element is suppressed by a lot. Another thing is that, as you will see later on, I have a lot of dispersion. Okay, now I have a cutoff window. Here will be this, even though maybe the dispersion like this, come down, let's say, I have a cutoff window. But if the band was here, I probably have a very broad feature, and I cut off a lot. While here, I also very broad, but if I frequency integrate, I keep all of them. So these two effects, actually, there's a lot of sporadic things here, okay? I'll be happy to see something at all.
My point, though, is that you were showing new data, I can tell where the tide of whooping pressure may be followed at the general point. Followed at the general point, it's sort of getting less when you go to lower zone, getting more when you go to higher zone.
Yeah, let me just say one more. Let me go on. I'll come back to your thing. But let's just say, here, let me, you can see it's a pretty nice spot, okay? It's a sort of, now if you go doping slightly off, I was actually quite worried about the results. This is only 2% off. You see no such a thing. You see things to be very straight. Okay, now let's go to the 15%. This is 10%, okay. Now let's go to data at 15%, and then let's hope I have it. I don't think I've showed it. I have a different plot of the 15% data. Okay. This probably does not have all the wind. You can, by the time you go to 15%, you also begin to see wiggle. If I have a higher frequency window, you see this guy has a little bit of oscillation. I think it also has to do with the interaction, but the 10% doesn't. Okay, that's 10, doesn't. It turns out that if you really look at the neutron data of those materials, the P peak of the neutron scattering width, this is about 12%. It's very sharp, narrow. Okay. As soon as you go away from here, it becomes very broad. I mean, the strike distance is very fuzzy, pretty well locked in when you are at about 1/8, because that's when it was really commensurate with the lattice. Okay. But when you are far away from, the width is very broad, that's why you probably don't see those diffraction patterns.
I mean, is there or is there not the effect of
as I go to the high doping, if I lose more weight. I have those data somewhere here, you see. Okay. Good. Here again, I mean, this is a 15%. Okay. You see, by the time I go to 500 millivolt, it's very dirty for the 15%. I think what happened is 15% you have some overflow of holes, and that screwed up the insulating region. And I go to higher window, I begin to have signals from this region coming. You know, I begin to have this, some of the green signal comes in. Yeah, so.
Let me ask you if there's anything special about the separation of four lattice components. If not, couldn't you get other commensurability?
Well, if you calculate in the doping range, the only commensurate thing was four. Yeah. The doping range. You can go to very high doping range if there's possibility will be there, but there's not too many data available. I think if you work it out, that's the lowest you can go, make the commensurate. You have to start with half filling. Right. So I have taken out the whole step of transparency saying exactly that, but I'm not going to say it. So all these obviously address this interesting question. You can see the key thing here is that the nodal states are all gone, right? I mean, those are the low-lying excitation. You don't see any of this nodal state in the in a D-wave superconductor, you will see in. So. Now, the next question is that, well, we think about one stripe type of picture. Now, of course, we have begin to see data which has to do with stripe-to-stripe interactions or moving transverse to the stripe. Now, this is the data, again, going sort of transverse to the stripe. Now you can see the band, you see some sort of, this is what I'm plotting here is the, what you see in the data, which is more or less a edge structure, but this edge moves as a function of angle.
So,
where?
Can you label your plot?
Okay. I'm plotting AK omega. I'm plotting this as a function omega. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that here I'm plotting now the edge position as a function of K, and you see this guy going up and become very flat. And that's the universally observed flat thing seen in all cuprates. Okay. It's very, 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 very similar. Now, this is pi zero region. That's the region where you, in those materials, you see the lowest excitations. In a, for example, a near optimally doped BISCO, this is where the maximum D wave gap is. Okay, but in this case, since we don't see the nodal state, they end up to be the lowest energy thing. Okay. I just want to point it out that for the you know, for the 15%, 12%, and 10%. Those are the locations in K space you have the lowest energy excitation in the stray phase. And you always find that the leading edge of this guy is pulling back from the reference point. So there's always a small gap. In other words, the electrons in the stripes, okay, actually have a gap. Okay. And we also know that the stripe phase, the materials, if you measure transport properties, they are poor metals, but they are metallic. Right? If the metallic state has an energy gap, I think that's another thing which is very interesting about those materials. It's very, very consistent. Yeah, I mean, just ignore the, that's one of the reasons. If you really look at the dispersion relationship, if you really look at the doping behavior, just forget about the nodal state for the moment, which I'll come back to try to address. You will find that the doping behavior is just like a disco, very similar. Those were the reasons sort of we feel, how to say, it's, we're not looking at a totally random thing. Otherwise, it will not be so systematic. Okay. I mean, this thing, you can argue, but in K-space, is extremely well-defined. I mean, those data in K-space is extremely well-defined. If you're thinking of everything coming from some random surface, it would not give you something that makes so much sense. Okay. Now, the next question, obviously, is... should I show you? Okay. Let me just go out and show you one more set of data. Now I'm showing you is neodymium-free Langston strontium copper oxide, which is a super, again, a 1-8 doping. Okay, those are high-temperature superconductors. And again, I'm showing you the window of 30 millivolt. Okay, those will, traditionally, you will see that's the way you map the Fermi surface, right? Look at the low-lying excitation only window, and 100 and 200, 300, and 400. Look at how nicely this thing behaves. Okay. So. You mean is there some weight here?
Yeah.
No, never in the 214 system. I'm talking. You see, I want to be.
So you're saying
I'm talking about Langston strontium copper oxide. Yeah. Well, I will come back to other material systems later. Well, at least you can see it's very weak nodal fermions in the 214 material. But that has always been the case. Okay. That has always been the case. These are in the preprints in Akihiro Ino's thesis and all that. I can also basically say that we've been working, you know, you see a lot of publications on BISCO. We've been working on this system for a long time. We had always thought the best way to judge a good sample and a poor sample is to look for signals here. Okay. So we always find very weak signal. We sort of, and the K space is vast. Okay. At that time, we don't have as efficient detector. Now we are sort of toward a magnitude more efficient. We can sample. Then you sort of can only sample small region here, and you don't find anything, you move on to other samples. Okay. That's the way how things evolve. Okay. Now I'm going to 15%. It begins to be near optimum doping. Now you can see those guys are beginning to want to make nodal states. You can see these are the raw data. He wants to reach out. Okay. And he also wants to reach out. Begin to want it to do. Let me just compare with the 1-8 doping. You can see it's pretty straight and all that. That's the low line excitation. Now you can see these guys begin to want to make nodal states. Okay. Now, of course, if you would go with overdoped Langston-Strunson copper oxide, now you can see, actually, if you this is not probably not the best representation. You do see begin to see very thin states. If you would make a line scan here, you begin to see signals here. The nodal states begin to be built. But overall, you can see the spectral waves still being dominated here. That was the question I was trying to ask you earlier today. You see, this was taken with data with polarized light this way. Okay. One thing is the same, you see high signal and a weak signal. The band structure calculation would say you should see even weaker signal here. Should be monotonically decreasing just because of the polarization. But this data clearly says go down and back up again. And this is it's weaker than here, but not that much weaker. That was the thing I was puzzled.
The result of that calculation is because there is a mixing in particular for the copper D state. Presumably the oxygen character would be what's causing that polarization.
That's strong, I see. Okay, maybe I'll try to learn from you later.
So let me clarify. For years, the 214 system, people up surfaces weren't suitable. They were saying that perhaps it was just people not interpreting, not seeing what they were expecting? Or?
At least in my case, is that we were looking here, that's sort of where we had always expecting to see the largest signal. Okay, and you don't see anything, what you decide to do is, it's very hard to say something when you don't see anything. Like, so we move on to samples, we see something. That's I guess
samples,
that's what...
Samples look
into when you look for it. When you look to here, you don't find things you would... And also all the... this was one of the reasons I gave up on the two-dimensional interpretation. That's what I was trying to say. I couldn't find justification for the nodal state, but if I think about superposition of the two, they're rather easy for me to. And that's also conformable.
Do you have data for X less than 0.05 where I'm looking at the value price?
Yeah, that would be the next thing we want to do. That would be the next thing. Yeah, that would be the next experiment we wanted to do. We have not done that.
I mean, it's likely that it's very purposely affected on this point, right? Because there are other experiments telling us to see that there are no experiments also in 0.4, right? Like optical conductivity.
Why? Why has to be nodal state?
Because you basically the same kind of signal in 0.4 as you see in 0.2 optical conductivity.
Yeah, so.
But there are horrible possibilities.
But that's what in, yeah.
There are horrible possibilities, like, you know, the stripes are clearly held by, say, 4-18 and things like that. And it could likely make that at the surface these stripe tendencies enhance as compared to the gulf. And that you are sort of consistently looking at stripe surfaces while the gulf is actually held, meaning more like the gulf.
Yeah, I think this is a very fair point, and I would not be able to defend that. I mean, the honest thing is that those are the caveats, so we have to put it in. However, I hope to show you later data that our systems, which we think the surface looks very good by all means, all measurements, even those LACO data, we do low energy electron diffraction from the surface. The surface looks very well ordered. I mean,
there's
you get.
The surface is perfect. There's a sort of fine balance between supportivity and stride forces, like a belief, right? And
mm-hmm.
when you help your localization, and that's what you're supposed to do on the surface, right? And the stride takes over, which gives you reason simply because you're the surface, even when it's perfect.
Okay. I mean, the honest answer is that I mean, those are not something we can definitively say. It's the best we have done. And I would say that in BISCO, where I believe the surface is very good, Yes, so many things look so similar. The way disperse goes, the way the pseudo gap changes, the pseudo gap at pi 0 point as a function of doping. Okay. And it will be very hard for me to believe nature will give us totally different reason to give you the same results. I think as a physicist, we look for a common ground of the phenomenon rather than be fascinated by the detailed differences of our different samples. That's philosophical, but I mean, the honest answer is that I can't prove that to you.
Some of the studies, when the guys were looking at these fermions, they changed the angle, they changed the age of the surface, and those aren't really relevant at all. They also changed the energy.
Yeah, that's a thing I can. I'm hoping it's a side issue I'm hoping to address. I mean, it's the KZ effect. I mean, I actually forgot over lunch. I should have pointed out that that's a very large effect because the final electron lifetime is very long. That come into a convolution, and you can ignore them if you only have two-dimensional case. If it was weighted by the ratio of velocity here and velocity here. And this velocity needs to be more than two order of magnitude difference to kill that factor. If you don't have that, then you will come in with another. That could be one of the reasons why you, why the insulators look so broad.
Okay. Yeah. So if you just sit near pi by 2 and pi by 2 and look at the gap,
yeah,
and just plot that gap as a function of that in 2.14, is it modified in decreasing?
Pi and a half, look at the gap.
Yeah.
The point is that I do not see any signal within 300 or 400 millivolts.
Okay, so the gap is bigger than you trust. I mean,
yes, exactly.
Bigger than that, the whole.
Yeah. So what I think is that that region being gapped by the charge gap. That's my green region, basically. I start out by talking this. I'm just saying that one of the key features, I think, in this insulator, I was trying to say that is create new states inside the gap. But inside the gap in this particular form, at least for this material system. In other words, pi and a half region, that looks the state very similar to the insulator, those guys being gapped because of the Mott gap. The charge gap. Okay. I would say comfortably 300 millivolt near that region. Okay. Because basically in the LSCO system, I mean, look, well, maybe we can look to here. I mean, no. 100 millivolt, you really don't see any signal.
Yeah.
200, it's very hard to say you see any signal. But by the time of 500, you begin to see a little bit of signal.
Yeah.
It's a very fuzzy.
It's
very hard. I mean, here you can see a very well defined. You see, when you have a curvature like this, you can define a gap. When you have a curvature like that, what are you going to do? This. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm trying to say now is obviously now you need to worry about. I think this, you know, this is a sort of the poor man's model of thinking. Basically, you have all those wells, have electrons, quarter field. They want to run inside here, and obviously. Those guys was able to tunnel from one to another. Okay. The flat dispersion I show you is the motion transverse to this. Okay. Now, how to describe it theoretically, I don't know. I mean, Descartes, obviously it's a rather dynamical thing. I mean, if this guy moves, I think the well kind of move with him. Okay. I think that is what gives rise to this. That is what gives rise to this kind of dispersion, and I think the reason this, when you go to very low energy, that means this guy is very difficult to be able to tunnel from one well to another. That's probably why it was such a heavy object. Now let me address one thing. Well, this is one materials family, which is the 2212 system. Okay, now let me try to say, is there a way, I'm sorry, 214, the Langston's Johnson copper oxide system. Now, is it, what about a better superconductors? What about BISCO? And here's, I'm showing you a comparison of the data of LSCO and BISCO. Again, frequency integrated over 500 millivolt. Okay. You can see the guy from BISCO, I will show you later, blow up. You see a little bit more state in the nodal region. Okay. However, globally, there's a lot of similarity between them. Okay.
The big bang at the gamma.
Yeah.
You mentioned the question. I mean, I sort of the impression that you can think about it as the sort of primary physics going on involved in the real electron, meaning a lot of different small things, where you make a big gap in the 5-2 point, and then some little thing is going out there, which is basically two, which is an alternative, which is very little small thing.
Maybe you should let me finish it rather than begin to jump on that. So let me just say one thing. Here's some data from 2212. There's a little bit of color scale changes. Those were the students. Those were the data plotted when we go back to Stanford. The earlier one was data plotted at Berkeley. So the blue was higher color. Now the red is a higher color. So. These are all the data from 2212. Okay, you can see there are variations from sample to sample. Forget about this for the moment. That's very underdoped. Okay, but these are four sets of data hugging near optimum doping, less and over. Okay? And you can see there are variations, but I think globally there are also resemblances and similarities. You can see that very straight sections and a lot of spectral weight being concentrated here. And this high energy behavior is very similar to the behavior we see. Now let me begin to address. But now you begin to see some spectral intensity in the nodal region. Now let me begin to address the nodal state. By the way, this 2201 is a kind of nuisance. The data, lower data look like this at high frequency. If you really look at the
single layer,
yeah. If you look at the very low frequency, you see this. This is the replica of the superstructure, which is a materials distortion. This thing was a TC, I think, yeah. About 20, 29, 20 something. Okay, of course, that's probably also the reason of creating this, is the superstructure replica. And that's, now let me show you the results of bismuth 2212. And I think it's turning out to be quite interesting. Maybe I'll show you this. This is the data of 2212, frequency integrated over 30 millivolt, very low frequency. Now you can see very nice nodal state. Well, at 30 millivolt, it's not bad, right? We made a line scan to some water weight. Okay, you can see the nodal state. Okay, and if you really look at the energy, actually, this is basically zero. And you can see also the Fermi surface is kind of more rounded. Okay. Now, this guy, if I frequency integrating up at very high, you can see the relative weight here compared with that is smaller. So now, and of course, I'm showing you the color bar here. Okay. Now let's show a movie on that. You can see, again, this thing is a 30-mm level. It's pretty rounded. You can see the nodal state very... you know, still it's straight and sort of dominated by pi zero, but you can see the nice nodal state. But as I go to higher and higher frequency, probably it's better for me to go from 0 to 30 and 30 to 100, 100 to 200. But the point is that being weighted and weighted by higher frequency energy electrons. This one way to think about this is basically to say there is a energy or frequency scale. Below that scale, in other words, if you probe the system very slowly, okay, you're slowly, you this thing probably looks more or less two-dimensional. That's why you see that. But if you're probing it with very high speed, okay, the probing it with very high speed, then you take a snapshot, you probably begin to see this thing has this.
I guess it's part of the theory that you fall. You can sort of think, you know, should know the relationship between net one hole in my system. Right? And it tells us about how you share electron fit into the system regardless of the system that goes. So in the physics, you barely see anything. Right? But only when you start to subtract space, high energy space, because only look at the lower and lower energy space, you get sort of a contrast enhancement and you figure.
I don't know. Maybe that's the right interpretation. I mean, I'm struggling trying to make a connection to LSCO. Obviously, is not the best superconductor. Like where the stripe effect is very strong, it's not the best superconductor. And the better superconductors certainly have nodal state, the D-wave state. I'm struggling trying to find a way. Hoping to have something to connect them, rather they say they're totally separate.
There's very strong deviation from square symmetry here.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I would have hoped, expected here be very strong, okay, and monotonically come down, just like what Aaron would say. And certainly I don't have this monotonic. That's what the reason I was hoping to talk to you.
That asymmetry is a matrix element.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry, what this was data, in order to avoid that, we took this data with unpolarized light.
Oh.
So it's polarization in all directions, in principle. Yes, this particular set of data. Just was because we worried about that effect. Okay. That's why we do the unpolarized light.
In that case, why is it asymmetric as this?
Yeah, okay. You mean these two asymmetric? Okay. There are several. There are several possibilities. Okay. We can go back to here and look the. Look the difference. How large is the difference between this region and this region? That's okay. That's from here probably to here somewhere. See no difference. Okay. Yeah. There are some differences, but it's still much stronger than here. Much stronger than here. And I can tell you the experimental details why there could be some small asymmetry. If you quantify it. Now, what all this has to do with superconductivity? Now, let me say a few things then. First, let me show you things you already seen many times. That's the normal and the superconducting state contrast in this direction. Okay. Normal state, you can imagine this band coming up, kind of doing this, right? But in the superconducting state, you see this beautiful coherent peak, okay? And you can see that, okay? And you can also even prove that this peak turns on at a TC, okay? You can sit at one point at the function temperature, you see this turn on at a TC. Okay, that's the difference between. It's very obvious. Okay. But now let's look at the nodal direction, the function temperature. Again, if you would look at the 100K and the 30K data, the beautiful dispersion of very sharp states, okay, nodal, sharp nodal states, and a beautiful dispersion of the sharp nodal states. And I think that the difference is that you need to look for details. There were arguments whether there's a difference or not. The point is that you need for looking for second-order effects to say whether there's a difference, whether there's a break or not. But in other case, the difference is jumping out at you immediately. Okay. So this, I think, let me just also relate to
the statement is that even the most between you see a sharp point of the sharp peak vector function along the nodal direction.
You mean in a normal state?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, depend on how you sharp. This is still not resolution limited. Yeah. So. Okay.
It's much broader than at the pi zero.
Okay, I actually have not deconvolved the resolution out. The reason is the K resolution that's bad. You see, when you have, it's not the energy resolution the problem. When you have a band like this, a small delta K translates into large delta E. Okay. It's 100 millivolt by degree. Okay. If you make your angular acceptance of your detector much smaller than a degree, you don't have too many electrons left to be detected.
Do you have a sort of resolution function like the neutron scattering?
We could, yeah. I just say I have not done that. Okay, I'm not done that. Let me also drive home this point. This is another thing I think also related. I'm trying to emphasize and try to convince you that the states here is a very interesting state near the pi zero. And certainly at underdoped region. Here I'm showing you data right at pi zero, okay, at the antinodal region. As a function of doping, you can see with the increase of doping, this peak in the superconducting state monotonically increases. To do 1, 2. That's a very peculiar result. Okay.
These are all taken at 4 degrees. Some.
Yeah, the same photon as exactly the same condition at pi zero. Same photon
at low temperature.
Ah, okay. These are all temperatures above 10 Kelvin, so below TC. But the dashed lines are normal state. They're always 10 Kelvin above the, its respective TC.
Yes, so they are different temperatures.
So the normal state data taking a different temperatures. The superconducting state data taking. This has a TC of 25 Kelvin. Those will be around 40 to 60. This is around 90. So at least it's the monotonic. Okay. This is about 7%, I think, if I follow this universal doping line. Okay, so I think I want to say this is a very peculiar result because this is telling you something increases with the increase of carriers you put it in a sense. Okay, so these are main things. I ran way over time, so I will probably just quit here. The two other things I was originally hoping to show was maybe I'll just show one data. And I was hoping to show was one is this, something I think is very interesting to me. Now, if you were changing the here is the data taken around the nodal direction, okay, from zero. And this is the K, this is the energy. Previously, we always thought we know the velocity of the band. In this region, the band velocity should be always linear. Okay. And it turns out there's a characteristic frequency below that the self-energy suddenly changes, the dispersion suddenly changes. Okay. And it turns out that at the same frequency, you see a sudden change of the scatter, a similar energy scale, you begin to see a sudden change of the scattering rate. Okay. And this is telling you that the particles is scattering off some sort of, in a conventional phonon picture, you'll be scattering off a mode will give you some sort of behavior like that. Basically, if you would, have a dispersion of a band, and if you would have a phonon frequency here, what you ended up, your dispersion will be look like that. That's at least the way Ashcroft and Merman draw it there. Because below this frequency, you cannot give up the real phonon. You still have a long lifetime, except you are really normalized. Above this frequency, okay, you can, your lifetime just dies. That's why the width changes. And I'm saying this in the same context of the frequency scale of probing, you see. If I would have a particle with this kind of energy, I would have seen the phonon. In other words, very fast, I would see the for my lifetime of my particle, I was seeing the lattice is no longer periodic. That's why the lifetime is very short. Okay. My particle at a low frequency, I still kind of see the average potential because I'm probing slowly. They still have a periodic, except that the parameters are renormalized. That was I don't know what this, what all this means yet, but I think that's interesting. The second thing I want to say, it's about 50 millivolt. I mean, it's we had a thought about. We had a thought about, maybe it has something to do with this neutron mode of similar energy. But there are problems with that, and Doug has taught me not to stick to that. So I think that's he's probably right on that.
What was
if I have a neutron mode, I probably have to treat the self consistently. I cannot just use a simple phonon analysis. Unless a good theory is wrong, I probably shouldn't use a phonon theory.
I think the trouble partly was that somehow, I'm probably confused on your search. I would have thought that the cusp you have coming up would have panned out the other way. But see that as it may, somehow, part of the trouble is that high energy, we have to get well away down below.
Should have come, eventually come back.
Yeah, eventually come.
It's just like this, should have come back here, in a sense. Yeah, okay. So let me just
try and just put in interacting with some type of modes, whether it's interpolation or however you do it, should come back.
Let me just end my talk by saying something. You see, I've so far painted you a picture which seemed to be self-consistent. But here's something which actually damps to that, but I think you should know. Okay. This has to do with this recent work Dan Dessau did on the Fermi surface of Bisco. You know, I've tried to show you the data, which is pretty straight. Okay. He was saying that by changing the photon energy, which you pointed out, the guys in heavy fermion, We had always assumed we're dealing with pure two-dimensional material. Don't worry about anything about three-dimensionality. And in anything like that, and he believes he sees something closed this way at a higher photon energy.
That's the 33.
Yes. Right. I was at the beginning quite skeptical about that, and I think he was very persistent, and I now believe he's right. I talked to Norman. I think he accepts my argument. The Argon group said, that's not correct. He said, if I would go carefully looking at the data, I think, although if you look at the raw data, you don't see it. If you look carefully, you see very weak structure. But this approach has a very important conceptual flaw. The conceptual flaw is that they did the experiment in the superconducting state and ignored the coherence factor completely. You see, if you are doing experiment in the superconducting state, you have to worry about the coherence factor. Let's say if you assume you have a Fermi surface look like this, just, you know, the coherence factor looks like this. If you were to go below TC, you will always see, always there, a feature persists here. So you need to do the data only in the normal state. And if you do the data only in the normal state, and this is some of the dense data, I think, you can see those are the things that convinces me. Let's think about a scan from here to here. You can see a band going up, that's the raw data. Sort of really reached a very good resolution. Okay. And come here, you sort of disappeared. Okay. And that's what the raw data look like. And Dan said that's what the data look like. And the Argon group said the data should look like that. That's what the Argon group wanted to go. And this 20 millivolt window with the highest energy and momentum resolution. So what all this, I don't know where all this thing. All this fits in into the thing. We have some idea. This piece has a certain resemblance to the things you look in the insulator. Okay, and that's why I was interested in the work by Duffy and Daniel and Morrell. And actually, in a many-body system, this region depends on how you look at it. It's somewhat complex. So I don't know. I had wished that this story would not be there, but it is there. And to me, this is very convincing. I mean, this go up, you know, and I can show you data. Once you go cool below TC, you see a small state coming up, very weak. Coherence factor should always be there. I think that we will see how things go. So I'm hoping to wrap it up just to say that I think at least in the LSCO system, the material want to deal with this, the non-observation of the chemical potential shift is probably tied with the fact that the stripes are forming, create states inside the gap. So maybe I'll quit here, thank you. The mean free path.
Yes, sort of mean free path.
It's about, I think it's about 30%, the best sample of Langston compound and best sample of YBCO differs by 30%.
From each other?
Yeah.
Is it the inverse mean free path? Is it what fraction it is of the Bruin zone?
In YBCO, they were talking about huge numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, the YBCO, they're talking about a micron mean free path, so
yeah.
It's a very small fraction of Bruin zone.
No.
Even the Langston was a factor of two.
Yeah.
But the structure long where we are interested in the stride rate is that it must be much smaller than that.
The mean free pass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. What mean free pass of micron?
Huang Ong was saying the mean free pass of each transparent copper oxide as measured by transport at a very low temperature. Okay. It's very large. Yeah. The quasi particles, it's a micron, that's what they were saying. Very long, very unusually long mean free pass. What? Resistivity, I saw with the micro ohm. Resistivity is micro ohm centimeter, right? On the best YDCO crystals. In the units of micro ohm centimeters.
Well, it gets. It's not measured below TC, right?
Right at TC.
Already TC is 100 microns.
I thought it's only a few microns centimeters.
And strontium, the strontium, lanthanum, strontium compound is worse. The results are much lower.
That certainly wasn't what I mean. Those are the numbers in the literature. We can look it up. Some of the new samples, it looks extremely metallic.
I see. So that has changed a lot from the early days. The mean free pass are so low.
I would like to have a nice package of colorful expansions.
Let me organize them then.
For my students.
A nice package.
Can you put these in order?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
We can get these scanned in to the web.
Yeah. Yeah.
One other
problem.
Dan Duffy, Dan?
Yeah.
Hi,
Dan.
And I don't know what your schedule was with you coming and going.
Well, my schedule is that I have a 5 o'clock flight. I need to leave probably around 4:15 or so.
You got 2 appointments this afternoon? Or what is it, Steve? Yeah,
we can keep it short. I have a
Maybe I probably shouldn't give you because all those data are unpublished. So maybe I shouldn't give you other than maybe the end of case scan of this one. Would that be all right?
So you can decide. It's up to you.
Yeah. Okay. I'll probably give you this. So I'd probably be, yeah. That's probably the primary
introductory.
My introductory was so, so handwriting lousy. Certainly doesn't deserve.
Name, and your name. That
doesn't deserve your web page. Well, maybe I'll just. Where?
You have a great research facility.
What do you say?
You have a great desire to talk with me. I'm trying to talk to your associate, right? I see that you're quite busy.
Yes, I am quite busy. Maybe we can talk over the phone.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're showing your data.
Exactly. And that's the course of learning.
Well, that's why I brought you on the board.
Great. So when we go back over, I'll look at the screen. Other thing, if we just want to...